Support for WGTD's morning show comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. Don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea is a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's program, we're going to be focusing on how restaurants and bars here in southeastern Wisconsin have been contending with COVID-19. And of course, all of us know that life in just about every respect has been dramatically different over the last couple of months. And certainly it's been true when it comes to restaurants and bars, the vast majority of which have had to essentially shut down in terms of in-person dining. And some restaurants and bars have actually shut down altogether, but some have managed to stay open with takeout orders that have sustain them through a very difficult period. And so we're going to be kind of sampling several different businesses here in southeastern Wisconsin and finding out a little bit about what has gone on behind the scenes to help them kind of adapt to this radically new reality. And we're going to begin our conversations with Angela Downs, who is co-owner of an Indian-Pakistani restaurant in downtown Racine called Chit Chat, located at 550 State Street. She co-owns this restaurant with her husband, Junaid, and we're going to be finding out about them, about what life has been like at Chit Chat during COVID-19 and how they are moving forward now that certain restrictions are being at least somewhat loosened, and the possibility of in-person dining is suddenly with us. Angela Downs, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you for making time for this conversation. Ahead of us talking specifically about COVID-19, I want to give you an opportunity to just give us a little bit of the backstory of your restaurant, Chit Chat, with you and your husband, Junaid. How did this restaurant come about?
Sure. So I met my husband. Actually, I was working in Japan, and we met over there and decided to come back to America about 2 years ago. And while we were in Japan, there was a concept there that was the curry cafe that I just loved. That was my very favorite place to go. And they had beautifully mixed together delicious curries and cafe beverages like chai and espresso. I had a Starbucks background. I had worked at Starbucks for a long time, and he was a good cook, and I thought, hey, why not try it here in America? And so that's kind of how Chit Chat was born.
Very good. And I described you as an Indian and Pakistani restaurant. Is that a fair summation?
Oh, yes. He's Pakistani. So he was working in Japan, but he's right from Pakistan prior to that.
Very good. And when did Chit Chat open again?
1 year ago. So we just recently, during COVID, had our 1 year anniversary, which was very uneventful because we were
not a time for big parties, that's for sure. So
yes.
So when it became evident that COVID-19 was going to impact all of us fairly directly, what did you and your husband start thinking about in terms of what you were going to do and whether or not you would remain open during COVID-19? What were those first conversations like?
Well, I think it was in the middle of March that it became very clear that business was going to be different. And it was a Friday night, and suddenly nobody came in. Fridays had been very popular, and suddenly this Friday night was just absolutely empty. And it was just, it felt very different. And we all, the staff, kind of looked at each other like, this is going to be something different here. We're going to have to do something. So we had, at that point, I had already been kind of keeping up on the news, and we had already brought in sanitizers, and we had been spraying down everything already because I have a nursing background. And so I already was just more paranoid in general. And so I think it was really the next day I said to my husband, you know, I think we're going to have to switch. We're going to have to be closing down. And I feel like I've almost lost my memory because it's moved so quickly that the government's mandate came into place. I can't even remember. But it just feels like suddenly we were closed, I think, by the next weekend.
But it's interesting, even ahead of government restrictions being imposed, you were already aware of this because of a drastic change in a sense, your customer's behavior. That was really the first sign for you.
Right, exactly. You know, because you know your foot traffic and what's normal. And just from the news, the media, we had already just noticed that it was time. I think, you know, the toilet paper started to go quickly in the stores. And I thought we have to adapt to this right away because I knew it would affect the restaurant industry right away because this is the place where people gathered.
Right. So at some point then you decided that that you would actually remain open but with takeout only. Was there a period where you were closed altogether before you shifted to takeout?
No. So at first, of course, we thought about it. I thought, we have to close. How are we going to be safe? How are we going to protect ourselves? But my husband was so worried because at that time, there was no way for business owners to collect unemployment for themselves. And being new, we didn't really have any backup way to earn income or a large savings to support ourselves. So we were just really concerned about how to survive at that point.
Right.
You know, to be honest, it was kind of like, well, if we close, we literally just have no income. So we had to consider that, obviously. So then we had to think, well, how can we do this and be safe? And that's when we decided that we would stay open as long as we could, but we would switch to the takeout only system.
I assume that even before this all happened, that people would sometimes order your food as takeout. I mean, I don't think every restaurant can say that, but I think most restaurants have had this as an occasional option. So what kinds of things did you have to do in order to shift over to entirely takeout? I mean, were there any drastic moves you had to make?
Yeah, this is kind of a funny story because when we first opened, we were new to the restaurant world in a sense of, I had done Starbucks, but that wasn't food. It was drinks, you know? But with the food, I was so scared because we already had enough volume in the restaurant. I actually didn't even have my phone hooked up for a long time because I didn't want to do takeout orders. So for a long time, we didn't even do any takeout at all. And we, of course, over the first year, learned how to handle everything and then started getting takeout and started even getting, you know, like delivery services from Grubhub and whatnot. But it's just kind of funny that the universe forced me to adapt to being very good at takeout after all that. But it was very difficult to find the right packaging that really worked for our curries because they're kind of messy, like some of the gravies. And then to find the right sizes because the sizes of takeout packages is very different than the bowls that'll be in the restaurant. And then to find, you know, what's going to keep the rice at the, you know, the right temperature or just the way to preserve your food as how you want it to be presented in a nice way. And then you think about the things like even styrofoam, how does that impact the environment? And, you know, like our containers, at least I think people can reuse our containers. Some people like to do that. Our containers you can put in the microwave, which I think is a nice. And there's just so many things to consider because if you're going to spend the money on the containers, There was just a lot to consider.
Yeah. Well, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because this is exactly the kind of thing that, I mean, even for all of the times that I have ordered takeout from your restaurant and other restaurants that I'm wanting to support during this time, it's never once dawned on me what you were just now talking about, that, you know, there isn't just this magic closet in which the perfect containers are right there for, you know, for easy taking. I mean, you have to figure out what is going to work the best for you. Did you make some mistakes early on, or were you able to kind of sort a lot of this out and make it work pretty well right from the start?
We did, like, run out of containers a few times, just because, well, of course, when everyone switched, there was such a huge demand for containers and the right bags and everything else. So we had to, like, find a company that could reliably get us the containers that we wanted, which was, another thing. And, you know, also the cost, which was surprising, you know, the cost of putting stuff on a plate of food is drastically different than buying all these containers. And you don't want to increase your prices at a time when so many people are losing their own jobs.
Exactly.
You know, so it was just, it's been a very interesting time.
Right, of course.
for this whole, yeah.
Have you basically sustained the full menu, or have you made decisions about certain things that, in a sense, wouldn't necessarily travel well? Or by and large, are you fortunate enough to work within kind of a cuisine that actually is pretty well enjoyable, even at home, when you've taken it home in a container?
Well, the only thing that we've really gotten rid of, we've gotten rid of our beef curry, and that's because the prices of the beef that we have been getting have raised so much. We had to increase the price of the steak that we offered because of that. And I don't know, because we use a halal beef meat, which is like slaughtered a little bit differently. So I don't know if that's going across all of the beef industry or just this particular beef industry, but that's one item that we've had to kind of change, which is, you know, we've kind of changed into a summer menu anyway, which is kind of, you know, so we've added, like, new things like our lamb burger and stuff like that, which is a little bit lighter for summer. So it's kind of worked out anyway, but...
Right. And how about the whole matter of supply chain? By and large, although I think things have settled down now, early on in COVID, of course, there was plenty of panic buying going on, which left empty store shelves and so on. Did you experience much in the way of interruption in terms of supply of things that you really needed in order to supply your customers, or by and large, have you been able to secure everything that you've wanted right from the start?
So the biggest dilemma we had really at the beginning was rice. I'm so surprised that we couldn't get our regular basmati rice in the first few weeks. And so we had to kind of find whatever rice that we could find. And luckily, it got us through until we were able to get more basmati rice. But I was really worried that we were going to totally run out of rice for a while. And we're really dependent on rice with our dishes. So that, and also tomatoes for a little while, had gotten, the prices became really high through the restaurant suppliers. And I'm not sure why exactly, but now they've kind of come back in line, so that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
And rice is available again, so.
You're breathing easier. That's good.
Yeah.
So we are now in a period in which restaurants here in southeastern Wisconsin are being allowed to open their doors, and so Chit Chat is doing that as well. Explain the sort of the restrictions that are in place at Chit Chat with your in-person dining, and how many of those restrictions are things that you have decided to do versus restrictions that, in a sense, are imposed from outside?
Sure. So we were allowed to reopen at 50% capacity. So when you open a restaurant, the city issues you a certain capacity, the number of people who are allowed inside. So I guess everyone can have 50% of their regular capacity, which for us is about 20-ish people. And then our tables have to be 6 feet apart from each other. So basically we had 12 tables, and now we have 6 tables. And to me, I feel comfortable with that. It feels very cozy and cute inside our restaurant, and I added some more, like, retail. So, like, fair trade products have always been important to us, and getting fair trade spices has always been important to me. And so now we're just showcasing more of that instead of having more seating. And it also adds to the cafe vibe. So to me, I feel like this is good for me, because I also, as an owner, want to feel comfortable inside of my own space. I don't want to feel crowded inside, because I still don't feel, that this virus is something, safe for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to. I don't want anyone to feel at risk when they come to my business. I feel like our restaurant is a piece of our home that we offer for people to come inside. So that's what's going on with seating. So that feels pretty good. And then we have, like, hand sanitizer being installed right near the door. An email we did receive does recommend that we ask customers to sanitize their hands upon entering the building, which I think is really nice. And I hope that customers won't be offended by that. I think that's just a good safety practice.
I quite agree.
And that's good. That's nice. I don't think that's a bad thing. And then the people who are working out front are suggested to wear masks. And actually, coming from Japan, which was a very mask-oriented culture, I was already sort of used to that, because people wore masks all the time just for pollution or because they didn't wear makeup. It was like a very mask-friendly place. So luckily, I was already used to kind of wearing masks for any reason, but some of my staff members don't always feel that way, but we are just wearing masks so that our customers also will feel, a little more at ease, because we are talking and breathing, because, that's the nature of a waitress, is to chat a little bit when they're serving food. And then we've, instead of having menus that we pass out, we've actually fixed our menus to the walls above the tables. So customers can just read the menus on the wall, and then we can just spray the menu after they leave. So it's another thing that can just be sanitized easily. That was the thing. I didn't want to print out a bunch of paper copies, because I just keep thinking, how does this COVID-19 affect our environment? How much takeout, we're having to do so much takeout, how is it affecting the environment and all these paper menus and everything else? It's like, it's a huge environmental impact, I think. So I was just trying to think of different solutions for that. And then that is another thing, though, that one thing about the supply chain is it's hard to find paper masks. I would like to have masks, though, for the employees easily, but for now we have cloth masks.
Right. Well, so, I appreciate hearing about some of the thoughtful choices that you have been making, and I suspect restaurant and bar owners all through the region, all across the country for that matter, are contending with some of these very same questions and trying to come up with the very best solutions for them and for their customers. Chit Chat is located at 550 State Street in Racine, and Angela Downs, its co-owner with her husband, Junaid. Angela Downs, I really appreciate you joining me today on the morning show and sharing the story of how you and your husband have been making your way through COVID-19. Thank you so much for being part of the morning show today, and best wishes to you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really delighted now to be able to turn my attention to Steve Torcaso, who many Kenosians will know as both the manager and the president of the Italian American Club, which is located at the corner of 22nd Avenue and 52nd Street. And this is an eating establishment that, like every other eating establishment, not only here in Wisconsin, but really across the country, that has had to contend with COVID-19. And so we're going to be finding out a little bit about what the Italian American Club has been doing and some of the challenges that they have confronted during this really interesting time. Steve Torcaso, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
I appreciate you making time for this. So first, Steve, I think it would be good for us to get at least a capsule summary of the long history of the Italian American Club, when it was created, and in a sense, what function has it served over the course of its long history?
Okay. Well, many years ago, this Columbus Park neighborhood is where most of the Italian immigrants settled. And there were a lot of little societies or clubs that formed due to the different areas of Italy, towns or cities that they came from. And as time went on, like anything, they, you know, there's strength in numbers. And they decided that they got together and met and worked out, you know, how they would like to form into one large society, the Italian American Society. And that happened in 1923. All these societies came together. And our very first president was Leonardo Montemurro. And you couldn't have picked a better person to be the first president. He was a visionary. And he was able to get all these people together to unite. You know, that's not an easy thing when you have every, you know, so many people with from different backgrounds of the country coming here, you know, and mm-hmm. get them all to form together as one. And he's seen the need that they had to have a home, a clubhouse. And they decided that they were going to pool all their funds, form this society, and built a clubhouse. And they purchased land here on 52nd Street and 22nd Avenue. It was called different then. I don't remember the names of the streets and avenues then. And that's what they did. So they had $8,000 in their treasury, which was a lot of money back in the 20s, in the early 20s. They somehow were able to build a building here that cost $100,000 to build. And this building opened in 1926, in November of 1926, and it's been the home of the Italian community ever since. And it was kind of having part of their Italy right here in their backyard.
Right.
And the club really helped them. They helped translate important documents. They helped some with how to get citizenship and things like that. They had death benefits. They had sick benefits. Those are things we don't have anymore. Now it's mostly social, or we help and make donations in the community and stuff like that.
Very good.
So that's basically it, yeah.
How long has there been this restaurant at the Italian American Club that was open to the public? Has that been there almost from the start, or is that a little more recent addition?
I think it came a little bit later, but they rented their hall from the beginning. The building opened in November of 1926, and my grandparents had the first wedding reception here in January 1927.
Wow.
So they did start having parties right early on. I don't know the exact date of the restaurant opening, but it's been open a long time.
Right. And so we have the restaurant down in the basement and that beautiful ballroom up on the top floor, which sadly at the moment is largely unused thanks to COVID-19, but we'll touch on that later.
That is correct. Yeah, that is correct. You know.
So, and again, you are president and manager of the Italian American Club.
Yes.
Is it always those two offices linked like that, or
no?
Not necessarily.
No. We've had a president that then was a manager, you know, but never at the same time. This just came out of necessity at the time. I was this is my 32nd year as president, and I've been the manager probably for I'm going to say close to 25 years.
Wow.
Besides, you
very
know,
good.
24, 25 years. So it started out as interim, and I don't know if I'm still interim manager, officially manager 24 years later.
I would say you've set down some roots. So
yeah, it's been quite an experience.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
So take us back to maybe 2.5 months ago when it first became evident that COVID-19 was going to impact our community in a very direct way, including restaurants. What were some of the first conversations that took place in terms of whether or not the Italian American Club would stay open but changing what they do? And were those decisions that you could just make as the manager, or were there people you had to consult in order to make some of those choices?
I pretty much had the freedom to make that decision, and I decided that, you know, we were going to go with just doing takeout orders, or dining room closed, you know, in cooperation with the governor's order. And I thought to myself, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. Well, man, did I get an education really fast about doing takeout orders, Greg. Let me tell you, when you go from a restaurant that we do takeout orders, but we never did every single dinner as a takeout order, you know. And there are so many restaurants around here that are, they do all their takeouts, but they have like a division just doing takeouts, all the pizza deliveries and stuff like that, which we didn't have, you know. So they're fine-tuned, well-oiled machines for doing takeouts. We were pretty rusty. So that first night that we started it, that first Friday, we were just overwhelmed. The phone lines were constantly ringing. And I realized our first mistake was when people got here, we told them to call the restaurant and we would bring it up, so that you have people trying to call in orders and people trying to get their orders delivered to them to the car, and some came in and stuff like that. So by the end of the night, I knew somehow we had to devise a system that didn't tie up the phone lines, and we talked about it. Well, the wait times, our customers were so patient and didn't give us a hard time because we weren't quite used to timing all to-go orders, you know. And there were some very long waits that first night. Well, the second Friday that we did it, we said, okay, we're going to extend the time that we tell people that they could pick up their order. Well, we didn't extend it long enough. We had even more orders than the week before, and we still hadn't fine-tuned about how we got our orders out into the parking lot. So that was the conversation of the second week. Well, the third week, my daughter, Rita, and my son-in-law, Ben, they showed up with walkie-talkies. And we put Ben out in a parking lot, and when people came here, he called down on a walkie-talkie, and we got the orders out, and things were much improved, you know. And we had to learn that we had to tell people, like, okay, we can't take no more orders at 5:30. We're sorry. Can you give us till 6 or, you know, 6:15? And most people were understanding of that, you know, and you figure everyone was busy with to-goes, so wherever you went, there probably was a wait. And but our customers, they were so nice and so patient. And one of the things they did early on, Greg, was take me off the phone, answering the phone to take the orders, because unfortunately, I guess, I like to talk, and I was kind of, especially if I know the people, and I'd say, well, how you guys doing? How's your mom, dad? How's your grandpa? Well, that really tied up the phone line. So I was banished from answering the phones once everyone got here, you know. And then I couldn't bring orders out to the car because the same thing would happen, you know. So I finally got delegated to the kitchen because we really needed extra help in the kitchen.
Right, so you're just you're a little too friendly for some of the most important.
Yeah, especially because we weren't seeing people. You know, we're social creatures. We're not meant to be isolated. You know,
absolutely.
I missed our customers and stuff. And what made long waits too, Greg, is we were working with limited staff to try to keep it under the numbers, and that was hard too. Mm. You know, so it was really interesting. And another mistake I made is I said, okay, everything's to go. We won't have any dishwashers. Well, after about 2 hours that first week of doing pots and pans and helping with that, I had to have dishwashers because there's still
right.
a lot of mess.
Yeah, no kidding. I would not have thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you think of that. And, you know, to go orders, too, is very time-consuming because everything's got to be packaged and wrapped, and you have to make sure the orders are correct. And sometimes we erred. I can't lie, you know, because we weren't quite used to it. Hmm. And it's not like, Greg, you're sitting in the dining room here, and you said, oh, Steve, you forgot my dressing for my salad. Well, after someone waits, you know, an hour to get their dinners, if we ran an hour late that first week and they get home and they're missing something, well, they got a right to be angry, you know. But most of them, the ones that we did mess up, they were very nice about it. Wow. You know, they understood and stuff like that. And they said, we're happy, we're busy, and it's not a big deal.
Right. Know? Well, and I was going to say that, and as somebody who ordered takeout that very first Friday night, I mean, I didn't actually pick it up, but I knew from the people who did that it was, you know, kind of a madhouse in terms of how many people were there. But what a wonderful problem to have. I mean, I should think that was really gratifying that so many people in the community were trying to support you at that moment right off the bat and continued to even after
that. And they
that.
Are. And I am so grateful. And I know every single restaurant that's doing it is so grateful for their customers that are coming to them, you know, because without them, we wouldn't be here, you know. And for us, like our type of facility, we were booked pretty solid from April all the way mostly to the end of the year. Well, once this stay-at-home came in, people had to start either postponing or canceling parties. And you can't blame them, you know, because you didn't know if you were going to send out an invite if anyone could come. So we lost all our parties from mid-March into mid-July now. And because even them, they're scared that people are still going to be scared to come out. And there's still restrictions on the amount of people that you should safely have and stuff. So that's why I hadn't opened my dining room yet, too, because a lot of places have. And I wanted to see what was going to happen and see if I could learn from other places. So we're planning next week, hopefully, to open our dining room. Be a little bit of a change because we have to have limited seating and stuff. And we're going to do the best I can. We can, and I'm sure that'll be a learning experience for us, too, for a week or two to get back to normal.
Right. You know? And, you know, it's an interesting learning experience, too, even beyond the, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts of how to do this is also, I think, not just for you, but for all of us, it's kind of given us a new appreciation about what it means when you go out for dinner and get seated and you see a familiar face across the room and have the same waitress that you've enjoyed before. I mean, I think a lot of us appreciate this experience now in a way that probably we didn't once upon a time.
I think that's so true. I think that's so true because, you know, your regulars are so-called, the girls, they all have their favorites who they want to wait on them, stuff like that, and they know, okay, this is what they usually get. This is their salad dressing. This is their beverage that they want brought to their table and stuff like that. And, you know, people like to be recognized like that, you know, because you have to make them feel like they want to come here. That's important. I always felt that way because people can go anywhere to spend their money. And we want to make them feel like they want to come here. We have to treat them good and take care of them so that they come here. Because without them, again, we wouldn't be here, you know. So
very good. So a learning experience on a lot of different levels, but you are moving forward. And again, will it be essentially your decision about when you go back to in-person dining?
They've left it pretty much up to me, you know, went to the side to do that. So, but I'm leaning towards next week if we can get everything back in and stuff like that, and be ready probably towards the weekend, and, you know, maybe on Friday we'll give it a try.
Right. Well, we wish you luck with that decision and all that goes with it in terms of keeping your customers safe and your employees safe. And in the meantime, I appreciate you kind of lifting the veil and taking us behind the scenes of what it was like to shift over to entirely takeout operation. And I really appreciate hearing this story, as I'm sure our listeners did as well.
Well, Greg, thank you very much. And can I say one thing?
Yeah.
I have to thank you, too, because during this epidemic and continuing on right now, and if any of you haven't looked on Greg Berg's Facebook page, you should do it and listen to his Songs from the Hillside, something different every night. It's wonderful. Sometimes he's joined by his wife, Kathy, or other guests. I'm still waiting to hear Mabel, but we'll see what happens.
One of these days.
Do yourself out there, the listening audience, do yourself a favor and it gives you a little bit of relaxation, takes your mind off all this stuff listening to Greg's songs from the hillside. Well, so I want to thank you for that, Greg.
Well,
and I especially liked Italian Night.
Well, you're very sweet, Steve. I appreciate that. And we want to remind everyone that the Italian American Club is located at the corner of 22nd Avenue and 52nd Street. They have been there for 94 years. Steve Tricasso, the manager and president of the Italian American Club. Thank you so much, Steve, for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg. Take care.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And to finish out, we're going to be talking about one bar in Kenosha, one of many bars in Kenosha, contending with COVID-19. In this particular case, it's Bill's Corner Club, which is located on the corner of 30th Avenue and 75th Street. And it is owned by Tim and Kathy Dinan, who I know well because they're talented son Max was a voice student of mine for many, many years. And so we're going to be talking about what it's like when something happens and suddenly the door shuts. And then what happens when it's possible to reopen? What kinds of questions have to be weighed in terms of whether or not it makes sense and how to do it that's going to keep everybody in question safe. So Tim and Kathy Dinan, I appreciate you joining me today on the morning show. Welcome.
Hello, our pleasure.
Good morning, Greg. How are you today?
Just fine, just fine. So, first of all, I'd like one of you to give us a little history lesson in terms of Bill's Corner Club, which I understand has been in your family for quite some time.
Yes, it has. My parents came from Illinois and actually owned the village for a short time. Couldn't support two families. There was two families trying to make a living out of it. So a liquor salesman told them about O'Brien's Tavern. So we bought it in 1961, my parents did. And I let my mom out of the business in 89 and took it off her hands.
And you've been having fun with it ever since.
So. Amazingly, yes. I didn't think I'd ever be in the business, but yes, it ended up being a very good time and a very good living for me.
Right. And it's for people who have never been there, it's a very intimate space. Exactly how big is Bill's Corner Club?
It's only about 600 and some square feet. It's got 27 seats in it, just room for a pool table and three small tables up in the top bar, and that's about it.
But if that's your speed, it's exactly right, and I've been there a couple of times and really enjoyed it. So COVID-19 rears its ugly head back in early March. What were some of the first conversations that I assume the two of you had when it became clear that COVID-19 was going to be impacting the community and in some way or fashion impacting Bill's Corner Club?
Well, we were sitting at Bill's on the 17th, on St. Patrick's Day. We have a Tuesday afternoon little pool league that we do, in-house pool league with a bunch of regulars, and it just came across on much social media that bars will be closing at 5 p.m. So that's what happened. We shut the doors on St. Patrick's Day at 5 p.m., and we have since not reopened due to COVID, just due to the safety of the public, of our patrons.
Wow. Was that a complete surprise, or were you pretty certain that that was going to happen at some point? You just didn't know exactly when.
I think we all knew it was coming. You could kind of tell they were closing things down. And if you look at bars, they're probably one of the tougher places to keep an eye on things. People are close together. People are hugging and high-fiving and playing pool and all that stuff. You knew it was going to be something that had to be shut down like everything else.
Right.
Well, and in my normal day life, my other job, I'm a travel agent. So I had seen what was going on in the travel world when things were closing down. You know, when Disney World closed down, you know it's trouble.
Yeah,
you
right.
Know, there's going to be some things coming down the pike when Disney World closed.
Absolutely. The world sort of stops spinning in some respects when that does underscore the seriousness of all this. So now we are at a point in time when, of course, some of these restrictions are being either lifted or maybe loosened is a better term than lifted altogether. And so a number of clubs, a number of bars have reopened. But and to varying degrees attempting to practice physical distancing and other safety measures. At this point in time, you have made the choice not yet to reopen. Explain what your thinking is, the kind of calculations that have been part of this decision for your doors to remain closed, at least for the time being.
Well, it's kind of a twofold thing. Our first concern, of course, was customers' and employees' safety. And I believe this is a real thing. I believe it should be monitored and kept as low as it can be as far as cases and such. And I don't think it was a good idea to open yet. If you could possibly do social distancing and wear masks and all that other stuff, it would probably be all right. But that's such a hard thing to do in a very small bar. We would end up, if we took 2 out of 3 stools out, which is what they recommend, we would have 9 stools in our building, which I don't know is it worth working every day to, you know, to maybe break even. Bars are at the very top of the list for risky places to reopen just because of the fact that you're packed in very close, that you don't wear masks because you're drinking things while you're there. So that's not a good thing. And then above and beyond that, the other thing is we're also remodeling now. It came as a very good opportunity to get some things done, being that we were closed because the bar's never closed.
What kind of conversations occur within your industry? I mean, I suspect that you have, you know, maybe some sort of professional organization of bar owners or tavern operators or something that surely communicate and share information and maybe even share recommendations as well. Is there such an organization or entity, and are they of any help to a place like you at a time like this?
They are. There's locally the Kenosha Tavern League. Statewide, there's a Wisconsin Tavern League. I'm also a member of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, which is a very good organization. All of them have been very good about getting information out and what you can do to help yourselves and what you can do to stay within the parameters of the laws and the rules and the recommendations. There's lots of guidance.
Well, and actually, we would have been in the last phase to reopen in Wisconsin, but until the Supreme Court overturned that. So I don't even know that we would have been in phase 5 yet. As far as the guidelines were concerned, when they did the phases in Wisconsin, the taverns and bars and restaurants were in the last phase. So I don't even believe we've reached the goals or the guidelines that were set originally to reopen. So when the Supreme Court overruled those guidelines, that's when, you know, places were allowed to reopen. And if you have a large enough business and enough social distancing, it can work. We're just too small of a building to do that. You know, we would only have approximately 9 people in the establishment at one time. So then where do you cut that off? If you want to come in and we have 9 people, now we have to tell you can't come in or ask someone else to leave, or it just isn't, we don't believe it's feasible at this time to reopen with the size of our establishment.
Right. So are you hoping that at some point circumstances will allow for something a little closer to what your normal occupancy would be? Or do you feel like you have to wait until, in a sense, the threat is largely over altogether? I mean, what are you, in a sense, waiting for in order to feel comfortable about reopening?
Well, I actually think right now we're waiting to see how these other bars do. A lot of bars have opened. A lot of bars have opened without any rules. If nothing happens with them and if things don't explode or spike, then I'm guessing it's going to be all right and it'll be able to be done. But we'll have at least 2 weeks of, you know, information from these other bars. And from what I understand, they're doing very well.
Huh. You mean in terms of busy? Yes. On the other hand, I'm sure you greeted with sort of a special concern the news report that over the course of a single weekend, 7 different bar employees were tested for and diagnosed with COVID-19, which really underscored the risk that is involved, not only to patrons but to employees when bars open up and perhaps are not operating within safe parameters.
Yeah, exactly. That didn't really surprise us.
Some were at gas stations, and there was seven different locations that it did happen. And from what I had read, it was only one person in each location. So I think that was handled well, and they did list where those locations were. So, and a lot of it, they weren't even open to the public yet for people to come in. It was carry out and some gas stations, I do believe.
Interesting.
So it wasn't too bad.
It wasn't really bars.
Yeah,
right.
There was only really one bar, I do believe. The others were restaurants and was carry out, and then some gas stations, I do believe.
So it's important for us to look beyond those initial headlines. Yeah. Here's the last
question. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the last question. So for a place like Bill's Corner Club, are you the kind of place where you have your regulars, like, you know, Norm, who comes in nearly every day and plops down at one spot on the bar? And what is it like to not be seeing, I assume, some faces that you're used to seeing on at least a semi-regular basis?
It absolutely is like a little Cheers. Everybody knows everybody's name. Everybody sits and has special stools or places that they prefer, and people know it. You do see a lot of the same faces. It's probably the biggest adjustment for me. When it first started, it was kind of like a practice retirement for me because I'm 63, and it's like, oh, well, this isn't so bad. But then you really miss the people. Yeah, it's such a nice group of people, and it's such a nice, good atmosphere that I do miss it quite a bit.
Well, we've had a lot of the customers just contact us personally, or if they're out walking, they'll peek their head in because we're there doing a lot of work right now, remodeling and doing some painting and things, and they'll peek their head in and say hi and that they miss us and, you know, when are we reopening? And so it's been very, very nice. Our customers are wonderful people, and they care, and they care about us and the other people in the establishment. You know, they're concerned about the people they don't get to see and how they're doing. And, you know, they're used to seeing that other customer and their other friend in the bar, and they don't get to see them now. So they're, you know, they call and, oh, have you talked to them, and how are they doing? And, you know, so it's a little family there.
Well, that's what it's all about. Tim and Kathy Dinan, the owners of Bill's Corner Club at the corner of 30th Avenue and 75th Street in Kenosha, shut for the time being thanks to COVID-19. Tim and Kathy Dinan, I really appreciate you joining me today on the morning show. I appreciate the cautious care that you are taking with some of these really important questions about whether or not to reopen, and we wish you only well in the days ahead. Take care.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for talking with you.
Monday on the morning show, I am excited to share with you an interview with Brian Dumain, author of a brand new book called Bezonomics, How Amazon is Changing Our Lives and What the World's Best Companies Are Learning from It. In this book, Brian Dumain, given unprecedented access to top executives at Amazon, sketches for us, first of all, the history of this extraordinary company and its leader, Jeff Bezos, the richest man in the world, and explores some of the ways in which Amazon is changing our lives and changing our world and changing our economy. It's really quite an intriguing book, and we'll be talking about it on Monday's morning show. By the way, next week also includes the monthly appearance of Brian Albrecht on Tuesday's morning show and Nan Calvert's monthly visit on Thursday. Support for WGTD's morning show comes to you from Jack Andreas, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe.